Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome to the 70th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni, and you can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
And my name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. And just want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. We've got a special guest that we're going to talk to about some stuff that's a little bit different than what we usually talk about. So we're kind of excited about that.
And as you listen to this week's episode, we encourage you to tweet out using the hashtag EduAllStars. We love seeing the conversations and hearing all the different kind of things that stick out to you. We are so excited this week to have a special guest, Jenny Bukos, who is a filmmaker, innovator, White House champion of change, and also a 20 to watch in education from the National School Board Association, along with many other awards and titles. But she's also the creator of ProjectExplorer.com. So thank you, Jenny, for joining us today.
Thank you. .org. I'm just going to correct you.
ProjectExplorer.org. Thank you, Jenny.
Now everybody can go flood the site, so .org.
Yes.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, we always like to start with hearing how somebody got started in education, but I know your story is a little bit different. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of your journey to where you are now?
Sure. My background and my story is insanely different than most people you've had. My first job out of university, I worked at an investment bank. It was meant to be a temporary position for me. I worked in the MBA recruiting division around creating those videos, you know, why do you like working at Morgan Stanley? I have a theater background at university, and they just figured that that was a pretty good fit. And they said to me after about 6 months, they said, oh, you're pretty sharp. Would you like to go run this in Hong Kong and Tokyo for us? And I said, I don't own a passport, and I've never owned a passport. So they took care of that for me, dropped me in Hong Kong and Tokyo for roughly 6 months, and thus started my global education. I can tell you, navigating a foreign society when you have no understanding of how to relate to anyone outside of your own culture can be a very frightening thing, and I did not enjoy traveling, but it really opened my eyes to how different my education would have been if I had just had one experience outside of my own culture, outside of my own religion, outside of my own language. I came back to New York City after that. September 11th hit. I got a severance package, and I thought, what is it I want to do with my life? And what I wanted to do was bring that experience to as many children as possible. So out of that came Project Explorer, because it's not feasible. There are 50 million school kids in America. It's not feasible to take 50 million school kids abroad, nor do I want to be a chaperone taking students abroad. And right around that time, online learning was just taking off. So this is around 2003. So I figured what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a travel series for children. Launched it in 2003. Educators had no idea what I was talking about. YouTube launched in 2005. I went from 10,000 viewers to 2 million with no marketing whatsoever. As soon as that became a platform that teachers were using in the classroom, you know, we were the first ones in the space. So
that's awesome. So talk about what you do for Project Explorer. When you travel around, what are you actually doing, and what are you actually trying to bring back to classrooms across the country?
Sure. So what we started out as was very much a virtual field trip, you know, visiting museums, going to the theater, seeing famous landmarks. And that was about, I'd say, the first year of Project Explorer. And these were done in under 5-minute videos, something that a teacher could incorporate into the classroom, very much virtual field trip. But as I started to travel more, I realized what was missing in education was sort of that connection to another culture. So everything that we were filming from the history books was still great to film, but what is it like to live and work in another country? What are the social issues that we're facing as a global society? What are some of the political issues we're facing? What are the environmental issues? So that's what I attempt to capture. So I am the director, the producer, the shooter, the founder, sort of everything. We work with a team of just four filmmakers. And then roughly 50 educators from around the country to sort of figure out what these videos are. And we film roughly 80 under 5-minute videos per year, 3rd grade to 12th grade, all online, all free of charge, with lesson plans on the back end. So if you're a teacher and you've never traveled, teaching a place like Azerbaijan is not such a scary thing anymore when we empower you with the tools to do it.
That's amazing.
So what's been your favorite area to film?
Well, no, No, it's that's a very simple question. My first series was Shakespeare's England, so I said theater was my background. So I went to a place where they spoke the language and I understood the topic we were covering. But my favorite place to film was in South Africa. I was very fortunate to have Desmond Tutu be part of our series, the founder of the Apartheid Museum, who was also Nelson Mandela's speechwriter, the first black musician to play for a white audience in South Africa. So sort of, you know, the heroes of the apartheid movement, because they're all still alive, all took part in our educational series. So it really was students learning from the best and the brightest in the world. And again, because it was a new medium, everyone was sort of open to doing it. So I go back to South Africa every year. I fell in love with the place. I wish I could do it now as I'm a more skilled filmmaker. You know, digital video didn't even exist at that time, so we're still on tape. So it's not as visually stunning, but the message is incredible. And that was done in 2007, and it's still our most used series on the website, despite having gone to 14 other countries.
When you first started the project, it started out, it sounds like kind of like a passion project. I mean, were you funding this yourself and just hoping like, hey, let's, you know, you're thinking monetarily like after the fact, or has it always been like a goal to be a nonprofit and that's what you wanted to do the rest of your life kind of thing?
You know, it wasn't necessarily a goal to be a nonprofit. We knew we wanted it to be free because the students who can't afford to travel can't afford these resources. So that was very much my upbringing. I didn't travel as a kid. It had to be a nonprofit in 2003 because there was no market to sell online video. There was no other way to do it at that time. If I started it today, it would absolutely be an app. It would be a weekly subscription. In terms of funding, you know, I always tell students and adults, never underestimate the power of a letter. So I wrote two letters very, very early on in my career. One was to Kevin Spacey, the Academy Award-winning actor,
Wow. Who
ran a theater in England and still does run a theater in England. And I said, I have this idea. And the other person was the artistic director of the Globe Theater. And both of those people used sort of their celebrity and their power within England to get us donated hotels, donated flights, all of our meals were taken care of. So the entire first year was done on less than $15,000. And once that sort of, you know, set the pace for that, we've never paid for a hotel, we don't pay for flights. And that's the bulk of our expense is going to create these things. So we're able to reach 250,000 students on less than $500,000 a year, which is 9 cents a student, which is just insane.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But it's because we have no expenses out of the country.
So when you're planning trips, like say in 2015, you guys make some phone calls about, hey, here's what our target market is. This is what we're trying to do. What about like access to some of these places? Do you get to have some special access because you're bringing cameras in and those kinds of things, and you do have an audience that's you know, of school children in the United States that is probably like the perfect audience for you know, all of these tourist locations all over the world really. So like, what does that look like?
I mean, we get insane access, and I just want to point out that we're an audience of slightly over 6 million right now. 5 million of them are based in the United States, and then a million are outside of the country. And our top countries are the places we've filmed. So South Africa, for example, uses us as their national social studies curriculum.
So when you
approach a country that way to say, we're not only building an American education system, we're building your education system, you get some pretty incredible access. So a couple of things have happened. I've sat at the King's desk in Jordan, which is pretty impressive, and
amazing.
To be allowed to film that is rather insane. Where else have I filmed? I have filmed in fields in Azerbaijan where they're demining, so they're clearing the land of landmines. That's an incredibly dangerous thing to do. They've never had young people in there to film something like that. I'm not that young, but my crew is that young. The British Museum closed for us for the day. That typically costs about $50,000 to close a wing. They closed for us for the day to let us film the Parthenon frieze, those sculptures that sit at the top of the Parthenon, and turned off all the security for us so we could actually get up and put our hands on the Parthenon. I mean, it's really amazing. But the countries themselves benefit from it as well. You know, they're investing in their future workforce and their upcoming, you know, adults and travelers.
And one of the ones that I loved is that you walked with lions as well.
Yeah, in Zambia, we walked with. they're rescuing them, so they are wild lions, but they have to be trained to enter back into wildlife because they haven't learned the necessary skills. So yeah, we've done that. I filmed a hippo fight. Hippos are like the most dangerous animals on safari. People don't realize that. From 50 feet away, the guide we were with in Zambia said in 20 years he's never come across that. So we captured something that we have good luck. We have very good luck. You know, I've had people helicopter me over Victoria Falls in Zambia with the doors off, and they say, well, if you fall out, that's the end of it. countries have been very, very open to having us there. No one has ever censored anything we do because we're there for education purposes. We're not there for investigative journalism. Mm-hmm. And places you wouldn't think. I mean, I never thought Azerbaijan would be open to having someone come there. And if, you know, you've got educators listening, well, why would you teach Azerbaijan? Well, it's part of the former Soviet Union. It's 98% Muslim. We ask for input from educators and students where they want us to go, and we're getting a lot of, I'd like to understand Islam. I'd like to understand areas in conflict. I'd like to understand new countries. Azerbaijan's a relatively new country. So that's the balance. We haven't filmed anywhere like Italy, Greece, because I feel like that material's out there.
So when you come back to the U.S. and you're at home, do you get bored not having all those great experiences or anything when you're at home? Or do you come home and you're like, oh, let me just separate myself completely from that so I can decompress?
Well, I can't separate myself because then we have to edit everything. So
yeah.
That takes, you know, 2 to 3 months to edit it and get it class ready. But I'm definitely not bored because the other side of what I do is I do teacher trainings on how to incorporate global themes into things that you're already teaching, and I do class visits with students, and I screen, and they get to answer questions. So I probably do about 20 to 30 school visits a year, so there's no time to be bored.
Yeah. Plus, you live in New York City, right? I mean, how can you be bored in New York City?
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking about all the places you get to travel, and has there ever been an experience where, I mean, maybe the hippo was one of them, but that you were absolutely terrified, and you were like, oh my gosh, are we going to be able to get this on film? Am I going to be making it out of here? I mean, if you film all these crazy things, do you ever have those experiences?
Yeah, I mean, the hippo fight was a little terrifying, but you're with military, so they've got guns. Mm-hmm. What makes it terrifying is, as a filmmaker, I have headphones on, and I'm just listening to the people giving commentary, and typically my back is to the hippo because I'm filming the person who's... so that, you know, that makes it slightly unnerving. I would say, and if my mom is watching this, she's now going to know the whole story. I filmed in Haiti after the earthquake, and I was shoved down a flight of stairs. And you know, that could happen anywhere in the world at any time. I could step outside of my apartment. And that really made me think, you know, should I be in conflict areas where I'm trying to capture? I mean, after the earthquake, it was a very hostile environment to be in. And they saw anyone coming in with a camera as exporting Haiti's poverty, which is not what I was attempting to do, but it didn't matter. I would go back to Haiti in a heartbeat because the second that happened, Haitian people saw what happened and they came to my rescue. But, I mean, that was probably the most terrifying. I've had machine guns stuck in my car. But if you can figure out how to explain to them that it's for children, it's okay. It's just sometimes being in a place with a camera is not the best thing.
Right.
So what about the future for Project Explore? Where do you plan to go, like, in the next couple years?
With the business or like to other countries?
Sure. Both. Let's do both. I was getting at what countries you're going to go to, but I also want to hear where the business is going to go.
Okay, so let's talk about where I'm going first. At the end of December, November 22nd, we're going to Peru, and that'll be our first project in South America. So I've been getting a lot from teachers saying, cover the Incas, so you go to Peru. Which is great because that's on the top of my list personally to go to. And then I'm doing a collaborative project with people who are sailing the world on a 72-foot yacht, and it's about water pollution and water security. So in January, I'll do Turks and Caicos, Dominican Republic, and the British Virgin Islands, and it'll be the first time I'm filming underwater, so that'll be fun. Then we're doing Bhutan, which is this crazy, insane place that measures the country's success in gross domestic happiness. So, and if you don't know where Bhutan is, it's next door to Nepal. So everybody knows Nepal. It's been in the news. And we've gotten a lot, please do China, please do China. We can't do China. They won't give us the visas to come in and film. So we thought Nepal, we thought Bhutan would just be an insanely cool place to go. And a lot of the kids that go to school there are going to school to become Buddhist monks. So we usually follow the day in the life of a school child. So we'll be following the day in the life of a monk in training. And then in the fall, we'll be Uzbekistan.
Cool.
Yeah.
You had mentioned prior to getting on the call tonight that you were coming down to Texas, which is kind of like a foreign country if you're from New York City.
Yeah. No, I hear Austin's pretty cool.
Austin is much like New York City. When you get outside, it's a little different.
So what are some of your plans, though, with the company as a whole, besides just traveling to a couple of other places coming up?
Well, we're shifting to a model where we're filming a project quarterly and debuting it quarterly. So the biggest complaint that I've had from teachers is, why aren't you filming 20 locations a year? Well, that costs a lot of money to do. So, you know, they always say you can't make a film without money. Well, we're filmmakers, so that's what we're, you know, we're always chasing. And one of the things that we're doing with Project Explorer is, I'm a huge advocate, and the reason I do all of this is global understanding, global awareness is the 21st century skill that very few people are talking about. If we're not preparing students to enter a global workforce, a global society, we're not preparing our students. And that doesn't have to be in replace of things that are being taught. Global awareness can be taught along with what you're teaching in your schools. So one of the campaigns we're rolling out in November of this year, and it's during International Education Week, is Project Explorer is leading the way with UNICEF, Sister Cities, the World Affairs Council, the UN Special Envoy for Youth, to certify 10 million globally knowledgeable students by 2020. And we have an assessment tool. So what are the 10 things that every globally knowledgeable youth should be able to answer? Things along the lines of, what's the most commonly spoken native language in the world? And I can tell you right now, 74% of American kids don't know the answer to that.
I
mean, think about it. You probably know.
Arabic? I mean.
No, where do most people live?
In U.S. or Europe?
China,
there you go, Chinese.
Exploiting
my weaknesses.
No, the point is, it's, you know, when we developed this quiz and we developed it with the Apartheid Museum and people from the UN, so people that you really can't dispute that they're globally savvy world leaders, and these are the 10 things that you should be able to answer, not to say you're a global citizen, but do you have the basic global knowledge to then act as a global citizen? Mm-hmm. I mean, seeing people think that there are less than a billion people on the planet is really a problem. You know, you should know that there are billions, not millions, on the planet. And it's around 50% of youth don't know that. So that's the movement that we're leading in the next 5 years to really bring global education to the forefront of American education.
Cool.
And then aside from that, I'm working on a television show. So for the website, we're 3 through 12, and I'm working on a program that's K through 2. So it'll serve as a springboard into the website. But that's really when you get kids curious about the world, because we all know kids are little sponges, and they want to learn about other kids around the world, and they want to learn about other cultures and other foods and other religions, and that's really the time to do it. So that should begin filming, and I can't say more than that. In January, February. But you'll know it's me that's doing it, and it's something we've been working on for 11 years.
Well, I know recently you've been recognized by the White House as a White House Champion of Change. Can you tell us a little more about that recognition and what that was like to get that from the White House?
I mean, I thought it was a joke when I got the email, and I know you have one too. So, you know, it came in at like 10 o'clock at night, and I thought it was spam. I almost deleted it. It wasn't so much the White House that impressed me, and I know that's really terrible to say, but I found out that it was a class that wrote in and nominated me. And that means more to me than any other award I got, that students were so changed by doing Project Explorer for a year and having me come into the classroom that they wrote letters to the White House. And I think that that says a lot for what kids want out of their education too. You know, they want to learn about the world, and they want to, you know, they want to be listened to. And I know exactly which classroom it was because a student said to me, "Does President Obama know what you're doing? Because he'd be proud of you." And I said, "That's great. You should write him a letter." So they all wrote him letters. I mean, it was great. It brought a lot of attention to the organization, but the fact that a class took time to thank me meant more than anything I've ever gotten.
Awesome. And what was it for? What was the champion of change? I mean, which was the category?
It was community choice. So like all the people who didn't really fit into anything else, because I don't really fit into a teacher. I'm a non-traditional teacher. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you have teachers by trade, but then there are obviously teachers who are just teachers by what they do. So I didn't fit into education. I didn't fit into filmmakers. I didn't fit into nonprofit leaders. So I was just in this catch-all with like seven other people who were doing amazing things.
So what's something that, you know, you're traveling around the world all the time. I imagine you have some downtime. What do you read books?
I watch a lot of film.
Watch a lot of film, I bet, yeah.
I do read books, but they tend to be research on the project I'm doing, so I don't really for enjoyment.
Do you watch a lot of documentaries since you are a filmmaker yourself?
I watch a lot of documentaries. I watch a lot of foreign film. I'm working on a project this year where I watch 365 videos in 365 days, which people listening are like, what a huge waste of time, but when that's your job. You know,
well, being a filmmaker yourself, tell what's your favorite movie and your favorite documentary?
I don't have a favorite movie. I have a favorite like sequence, and it's All the President's Men, and that's the Watergate scandal. And there's just a sequence that if I could go back in time, I wish I could film it, but you know, I was like not even born at the time. So, and I always travel with that film. It's always on my laptop. It's always on like my iPod. I travel with it everywhere I go, and I probably watch it, I don't know, 10 times a year. It's just this beautiful scene. And if you haven't seen it, it's the scene where they're researching in the library and like the crane comes in and they shoot all the way up from the Library of Congress. It's just insanely good. Documentary, I mean, I see so many that I don't have a favorite, but I'll tell you, I just watched something called Tim's Vermeer, and it's Penn and Teller who produced it. And
yeah,
it's,
I've heard about that one, yeah.
He's a famous Dutch artist. And the idea is, you know, with the right technique, can anyone paint a Vermeer? And I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. Everybody should go watch it. It's just insanely good.
Someone just told me about that like a week ago. Yeah, I definitely want to check that out. I love documentaries. If I sit down and watch movies, like I'm watching documentary first. And my wife's like, really, another documentary? But I'm fascinated.
We like the documentaries over animals, and then we realized that both of those are depressing, and my wife said, we can't watch these anymore. This is too sad.
Yeah, I know. I just watched Chasing Ice, too, which is about the melting of the ice caps, and you know, just some beautiful film work there. But what documentarians go through to get their stuff made is just, it's a miracle anything gets done.
As far as filmmaking, I mean, was this your first foray into filmmaking, or did you kind of have a little background in this, or not?
Totally self-taught.
Okay, cool.
Self-taught web designer, self-taught shooter, editor, producer, script writer, and the majority of my crew is as well. I'm looking for people who have a passion for sharing the world, and then will just say, teach me the ropes, which I actually think is kind of cool when you go into classrooms and kids think, oh, she must have gone to film school. Nope. Picked up the camera. And you guys know anyone can be a publisher and anyone can be an editor in this day and age.
Yep. So what is the thing that you are, looking at all that you've accomplished, what is the thing that you're most proud of accomplishing?
well, it'll be the television show when it debuts. But most proud. I don't know. I mean, just the fact that I've sustained this for 10 years.
Yeah, 6 million viewers a year. I'd be pretty proud of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's hard because it's not just me. I mean, it's an entire
group of people. Of course it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's really hard to say. Like, whatever I'm doing at the moment, I'm the most proud of. So, like, every film I do, I'm like, this is my favorite. And then I improve on it just a little bit next time. Like, okay, that's my favorite.
So we generally ask this to teachers, and we know that some teachers can definitely have rough days, but, you know, outside of education, there are rough days as well. So when you're having a rough day, what do you do to, like, recenter yourself?
Well, watching movies is a big thing for me. I like to go to museums. I need to get inspired and be that art, be it history. For me, I spend so much of my time when I'm not on location, like, hunched over my computer just looking at my video, that sometimes you just need to step away from that. So I do that, and I spend time with my family. I've been spending a lot of time with my family this year. I have a new niece, and she's, like, the first grandkid, and she's just awesome. I mean, I think, you know, to go back to your other question, I would be most proud if she grew up using my stuff and went on to do something fantastic in the world.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, what would you say has been the biggest thing that you've learned in the last year?
In the last year?
Mm-hmm.
Just put yourself out there and don't be afraid to ask. So I sort of had this idea for a television show in the back of my head forever, but because I'm not a famous television producer and I don't have the connections, I just thought it was never going to happen. And I finally asked the right person, and this right person has just driven everything forward. So never underestimate the power of a letter, and never be afraid to ask. What's the worst someone can say to you? It's no. They're not going to say, you're a horrible person, you know, I hate you. It's no. And if you can learn to take no, then you're good.
Such a great lesson, especially for kids too. Just, man, I didn't learn that until very late in life, and I wish I would have learned it much sooner. But getting out there and just asking. So, what are some of the biggest challenges in your job?
Fundraising. Always fundraising. We sort of straddle the global education and the ed tech. So we are leaders in ed tech because we were some of the first online video. But we hear a lot, time and time and time and time again, that we're not interested in funding you. We already fund the Khan Academy. Mm-hmm. And that's very frustrating because the Khan Academy and I were two very, very different things. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think that there's space. I would love it if 10 other people were doing what we were doing. But I'd like to think that there were funders and space for more than one person in this area.
Right.
And it's been incredibly frustrating. So I think that's the biggest challenge. And then just, you know, convincing people that this is important, that, you know, the people who get it. The people who don't say, well, I have to do science first and I have to do math first. Well, you know, I'm just trying to show them a different way. In Azerbaijan, we filmed the game of chess. It's their national sport. So we did risk strategy and permutation in chess. It's a 4-minute video, but it introduces a math lesson. And that's just thinking in a different way and getting educators to think that way has really been a challenge because I'm not an educator by trade, I think. And I think if I might be a little more successful. Not that 6 million kids isn't successful, but we're a free resource. Why isn't everyone sort of tapping into this? And can you imagine, like, how excited kids would be to go into math class and get to watch a video? I mean, that would be really exciting. I never got to see a video in math class.
Absolutely. Yeah, math teachers are notorious for never, ever showing you videos.
Yeah.
Not our listeners, of course, and surely not Todd, but, oh my gosh, like, in campuses I've been at, it's like, math class, no way that video comes out.
So those are my two biggest, and I'm really hoping that this year I can sort of drive that message home that there's, you know, it's not a zero-sum game. There's room for both. And it really is. I mean, we just did a huge piece of research, like 2 month study, and 9 out of 10 students wish their classes had a more global approach. So kids are asking for it. You want to inspire your kids, they're asking for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Ginny, one of the questions that we always like to end on is, what is something that you are really passionate about right now?
Really passionate about right now? Oh, okay, this is pretty easy, actually. I just started tweeting it quite a bit, sort of demystifying and moving away from fear-mongering in the media, especially with the Ebola thing. The amount of misinformation that's out there is something that I'm attempting to address. I don't know how successful I'm going to be, but I think as a world traveler, not being afraid to travel, I have a platform to sort of do that. I'm not afraid to travel right now. It's just a matter of getting the facts out there to people.
Sure.
I know that's a strange thing to be passionate about, to say I'm passionate about Ebola.
Passionate about Ebola.
Hey, we've all got our own passions. That's what makes us all different.
I know. I'm a little weird. As you can see, like, I have the queen behind me. I have odd hobbies and interests.
Well, Ginny, thank you so much for coming on with us today. I remember meeting you 2 years ago at the 20 to Watch, and just to see your program grow over the last 2 years has been exciting. I've used it in my classroom and love it, and it's funny because it worked out conveniently that we're doing this interview tonight, because actually tomorrow's a work day for my staff, and one of the things we're introducing them to is Project Explore, to use within their PBL-based classrooms, because there's so many great resources that are on there, and it's free, and I'm all about free. So, but Ginny, how can our listeners connect with you?
Twitter is probably the easiest way. We're Project Explorer, or if you want to connect with me directly, it's Good Global Cities, not citizen, cities, just ends in the Z, in the Z. And we always get back to everyone. Teachers have questions. We will Skype with your classrooms. We will do Skype professional development. If you're not sure how to use Project Explorer in the classroom, we will help you figure that out. That's what we're here for.
Awesome.
And then ways you – go ahead.
No, you go, Chris.
I was going to say. And ways you can connect with us on Twitter, you can find us at EduAllStarsHQ using the hashtag EduAllStars. You can also go to the website EduAllStars.com/podcast to see the 70 previous episodes that we've done. And then on iTunes, you can find us at EduAllStars using no spaces and pull up all those episodes there to use on your portable device.
And join us next Sunday at 8 p.m., November 2nd, as we interview Rushton Hurley. And then on November 9th, we'll be interviewing Donalyn Miller, also known as the Book Whisperer. So you'll definitely want to check those out. Thanks again, Ginny. It was great talking to you, and I'm glad that we got to share your story with so many people.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Yeah. Nice to meet you.